It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 14th of April 2014. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. I'm Chris Walker, and on Saturday the 14th of April, I spoke to the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone. I talked to two of the participants in the Waiheke Community Gallery's Artist in Residence series, Steve Lopez and Ewan McLeod. I spoke with Bridget Morgan from the Fossil Bay Kindergarten about their harvest fair, and we were joined for a song by Steve, Luca and Jacob Edwards. And then I spoke to Dawn Jeffries from the Waiheke Island Council of Social Services. And we're straight into things this week. Oh, we've got the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone here. If you're new to listening to the show, Alan and Alex join us once a month to cast their mind over island affairs and sometimes a bit further afield as well, and share their opinions on what's been going on. So good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Yeah, how are you? Always an opinion or two amongst the three of us, eh?
Definitely.
There is. Well, there's no sign of anything slowing down, really, is there? It's all still full steam ahead.
Summer is just relentless this year. It's quite amazing. Mm. I don't know where this idea that somehow Fuller's are bringing less people over. It certainly doesn't feel like it to me.
Yeah,
they're getting here somehow.
Yeah, it sounds like your classic, someone didn't notice the last column of numbers or something. It can't be like that.
Yeah. The island is just packed at the moment.
Well, there are 40,000 less because of the sculpture show, but I'd say there could be 40,000 more over the summer anyway.
Yeah, it certainly feels
probably
like
right. It feels the same, yeah.
That seemed to be the glaring omission in that story, that they were saying, it's unexplained drop in numbers, but sculpture in the Gulf surely would have accounted for all of that.
Well, yes, if you're comparing with last year, then obviously there's going to be
there were 45,000 bums on seats on Fuller's and SeaLink, of course, yeah, but it did make a difference, yeah.
So the place has still been busy, and the other thing that's still roaring apparently is the real estate market.
Yes,
it's hard to even tackle the real estate market on the radio, because you have this obligation that you can't swear. you can't use really profane language, which of course is the natural thing that you want to do.
But didn't I see you with a folder that said how to become a real estate agent? I thought you were doing night classes, Alan.
Not me. Oh, dear me, no.
Just kidding.
Oh, God. I think it was Stephen Fry who once commented, there's only one thing worse than a real estate agent, but at least that can be lanced and then dressed with a surgical dressing.
Yeah.
There do seem to be more and more of them, don't there?
Yes.
At the moment, everyone's jumping on board.
Mm.
Well, look, I think it's one of those things, when there become too many, you just have to have a cull.
Mm.
I mean, we do it with ducks every year, and it's far too many ducks, so you go out and you reduce the numbers a bit. Are we going to get to the point where we have to have a cull of real estate?
Yeah, well, it's a finite system, so it's a smallish island. There are just so many homes, and you can't sell a home every 2 weeks. It gets to a point where
it does seem like everyone is just cramming into the real estate market, thinking that they're going to make it big. And it's like,
for me, the
couldn't you people do something at least a little more honourable, like I don't know, dealing meth or something like that? At least there would be a level of honesty and integrity.
For me, the classic bullshit is you see a new home going up, and then a few months later, you see it in New Zealand Homes and Gardens, and this couple all dewy-eyed saying, this is our dream home. We spend our lives building this place. And then a month later, there's a for sale sign in front of it.
That happens a lot.
Every time. Well, it's like a whole marketing system. You build this place. As soon as you've had your exposure in Homes and Garden or whatever, then you're all set to sell, and away you go.
I think the thing that infuriates me with a lot of the realtors on the island is this thing of putting notes in your letterbox saying, do you want to sell?
Mm.
Because it's the same as saying, do you want to move off the island?
Yeah,
because once you sell your house, it's going to be difficult to get back on the ladder again.
Yeah.
For a lot of us, if we've had a house on the island for a while, then we're definitely asset rich.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you can trade upwards.
Yeah, we're not in the position to get up to the millionaire bracket. Eh? Yeah,
they're a pushy lot, realtors. Yes, it's not surprising. I mean, they really do have to develop quite tough skins, because they know nobody likes them.
So back to that point you were making, Alex, about, you know, these places get built and then, you know, within a few months they're on the market.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, Alan, you were at Faritana Bay when the building was bought on
Yes.
And I think a lot of people, you know, were surprised to see that that is now on the market.
Yep.
No mention of it being a kind of a boat shed and utility shed. I mean, this is a beautiful, unique three-bedroom home.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Which brings us on to the whole corrupt business of the council planning. As was noted in the Gulf News this week, there's another really inappropriate development going on at Onitangi, and some planning official with a brown envelope full of cash still rustling in his back pocket is going, oh, minimal impact.
Yeah, well, I think people have mixed up the words. They said the effects were no more than minor. Maybe they were talking about digging an open cast mine.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. It's not mine.
But I know that people who work for the council, they get terribly upset if you mention the possibility that they are on the take, that they are corrupt.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Well, my advice to them is, if you don't want to be accused of corruption, stop behaving like you're corrupt.
Well, stop being so naive. Maybe that's the thing. There was another case on the Church Bayside, the house that replaced the Little's house.
Oh, God, yes.
This great Georgian mansion, 13 bedrooms, da-da-da. I don't know if you did what I did, but I read the submission by the family that wanted to build this place. There are a couple in London with two toddlers, and they talked glowingly about how this was going to be their dream family home. I don't know how a couple with two toddlers needs 13 bedrooms. It's basically a boutique hotel. So they're just fibbing in the submission. But the planning official isn't that savvy to say, come on.
Although I've had reason to be looking at the district plan over the last week.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's a complex document.
Yeah.
And it is, I think, surprising in some ways what you can't do and surprising what you can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard that this argument's been put to me in the last week that actually, you know, when these planners are working and working with people to put these buildings through, in the end, all they're doing is following the rules.
And the rules are that complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not so sure about that because there's a subjective assessment. Effects no more than minor. There's a double negative there or passive use or whatever.
Yes.
Effects no more than minor. The person who assesses the effects no more than minor must be making a subjective call. Because now you probably find, I don't know, 80% of Waiheke would consider the open cast mine on Onitangi Beach a little bit more than minor.
Definitely.
But one council official thinks that's no more than minor.
Yeah, so it will all come down to the definitions of what's, if, you know, are they talking about, I know they were talking there about traffic, weren't they? But I suppose you're talking about traffic, runoff, dust and noise.
And visual immunity. Yeah. You know, suddenly there's this bloody great thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are effects during the build and they're long-lasting effects. And for a place like that, a long-lasting effect is a sewage dispersal system in the beach.
You know? I mean, it all just continues to add to this feeling that when it comes to dealing with Auckland Council, they are the enemy. They're not on our side. It's
unless you're the person who wants to build the house.
Oh, yes. And you can afford the inducement.
But there's also an interesting
contribution to your favourite charity.
There's an interesting narrative. I have sort of occasional interactions with the folk that are in this range. And a common dinner party conversation is, oh, the trouble we had trying to get our plans through. And when you do the barest amount of investigation, you find out that the people that have the trouble getting their plans through are the people that are breaking the rules. If you build within the building envelope, you go through no problem. You only have trouble when you go and break the rules. But it's almost like a lot of people think it's their right to break the rules and then moan when there's a little bit of a hold-up. But every single one that I've ever heard who said, oh, I'm having trouble getting my building plan through, every single one is breaking the rules.
Now,
going beyond the envelope.
Speaking of genuinely horrible buildings, there was an inspiring story from Glasgow last week. I don't know if you noticed this. Glasgow is due to host the Commonwealth Games later this year. And as part of the opening ceremony, they're going to demolish five of the six infamous Red Road tower blocks. These hideous remnants of 1960s Soviet Britain.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where the town planners thought it was possible to stack poor people who drink.
So only in Scotland, instead of fireworks, we'll have an implosion.
There was one columnist, I think in The Guardian, was saying, this doesn't feel right. This is... It's too much like a public execution. But then, why not? Because these were a bad idea.
But are they really going to have it on the opening night? Like, watch the buildings fall down.
Yes, five of the six enormous, hideous 1960s Soviet Britain tower blocks are to be demolished as part of the opening ceremony.
And all the athletes get to take a remnant of a brick or something.
Yes, well, you know, it's another of those sort of horrible bits of communist concrete that like the Berlin Wall, you can keep a souvenir. But publicly executing horrible buildings... is something that may catch on.
Should we do it here? I mean, yes. Which buildings would be up for...
Well, that one they're building on Only Tangy Beach. Let's blow it up.
Well, it's too late now. It's a big damn hole. I mean, yeah, I suppose we could blow it up as soon as it's built. But then it might be built and then a year later someone would want to build a bigger one.
Yes.
Someone might want a 13-bedroom place for them and their two toddlers. Never know.
Mind you, of course, we also have, and we were discussing this earlier, there's one thing that you don't have to destroy on this island because it seems to be capable of doing it itself, and that's the roads.
Oh, yeah, they fall apart, yeah.
Now, I just got back last weekend to discover that Wharf Road, just down the road from me, has once again been dug up and is in the process of being replaced.
Yeah.
Now, it occurred to me that what we need is, first of all, do the company, who is it, Downer, that do the roads here?
Yeah, well, I think
they offer Downer any kind of guarantee on their work?
Yeah, you think you should. I think Downer gets the work, but subcontracts to a couple of local, smaller civil contracting outfits. But either way, they don't seem to last the roads they build.
They do not. It's like they make them out of cornflakes and wallpaper paste.
But they do. They use the stone from the quarry, and that's what it's like. So, I mean... I don't know. I mean, how much of it is down to the construction? How much of it is down to the raw material? And what's the alternative? The alternative is bringing metal from town
and doing the whole thing properly, but it doesn't need to redo it.
I understand the substrate of the roads is the problem. Apparently, a lot of our roads are built on sort of squishy substrate. Pretty bad. I've heard of roads that have been laid on top of ponga logs, you know, really bad.
Because it wasn't that long ago, was it, that there was quite a group who were making a concerted effort to close the quarry down by not allowing them further resource consent, which would have meant all of our metal coming by truck.
Heard our quarry rock is pretty...
crumbly.
Yeah, pretty crumbly, yeah.
I mean, it is just compacted clay.
Now, I often think of that great rock of peace opposite the market. How they found an entire giant rock in our quarry must have been.
Yes.
And I often worry about it cracking and crumbling because then the old symbolism of the rock of peace would fall apart, wouldn't it?
True.
Yeah.
Yes.
So using it carefully.
Using Waiheke rocks, definitely not a good idea if you want them to last. But I was thinking it would be interesting because I think a lot of people, they think, hang on a minute, wasn't this road rebuilt only 18 months ago?
What happened to me, our road, Hill Road, was built 2 years ago and now it was...
all falling to bits again. Yep.
It just...
Because, of course, we did go through the last 3 years with the rather amusing spectacle of our local board. Every time a piece of road got fixed, they would announce it like it was a triumph of planning an initiative. It's like, you know, calm down, folks. It's another piece of road getting fixed. It happens all the time. I suppose in the absence of them doing anything else, they had to sort of claim that roads being fixed was all down to them. And you know, aren't you lucky to have us? Because this road wouldn't get fixed if we weren't here to make sure it happened.
We had an interesting angle. We've got a visiting runner at our house, and he went for a run last night. And he came back saying, what's with that road round the foreshore between Surfdale and Blackpool? He says it's quite... he says it's quite scary just to run along between those the traffic calming measures. He said that was all a bit stressful from a jogger's point of view.
Yes, it is extremely odd down there. That was a yes. Oh, let's not even go down that one again.
Yeah, but that you know, it's not tar seal. The object of discussion right now is tar seal not lasting on the island.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely not a good look when it's every 18 months. I mean, surely there must be some better way of doing this.
Well, there's certainly a disconnect between the fancy houses and the crumbly roads, you know. So what do we do? less. I'd go less down. I'd go down market. My sort of natural trend would be to go down market. Let's go less fancy. Keep it crumbly.
Well, there was a story this week that connected the two together, where someone was doing excavation for a house which required moving a large amount of material. I think they worked out, you know, it was thousands, hundreds of truckloads of material.
Yeah.
And
to the other end of the island.
And yeah, and so the question was raised, well, does the impact on the roading infrastructure come into play there? And the answer is no, it's completely disconnected. So, you know, the
that story, the trucks were going from Church Bay to Manawar Bay, weren't they? They were making quite a trip, eh?
Yeah.
And great big trucks full of rocks. I mean, they're an icon of Waiheke's roading system, of course. The massive truck full of rocks. It's always, particularly if you're a commuter and you're trying to get to the ferry, the truck full of rocks is always there in front of you. But yes, there do seem to be more of them. And mind you, I did get this one from a roading engineer who said that at least if things are running continuously, it's not so bad. The big problem is things like buses, whose tyres get very hot. And they keep parking in exactly the same place.
Yeah.
So bus stops do require regular replacement because the buses destroy them.
Mm-hmm. Never thought of that. But we could have... We should use smaller buses on Waiheke. I think we could do a lot better with more smaller buses than a few big buses. Because they take up quite a span of the road.
I view buses as somebody else's problem.
Well said. I view buses as wonderful adventures. I love catching a bus. I get a little thrill of like going on adventures.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah. I get the opposite. I get this feeling when I sit down on a bus. It's like, how did my life end up like this?
No,
why am I on a bus?
I love buses. I see every bus stop as a temple of hope because it doesn't matter how long you wait, the bus will eventually come.
Yeah, so a somewhat fractured and broken temple of hope, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But it's, you know,
especially the one opposite the ESPCA, which seems to be destroyed on a regular
what
basis.
What the hell happened to that one? No, that was pretty spectacular.
Look, you've got to have some outlet for the island's youth, shall we say.
Built,
give them something to bash their heads against.
A unique twist on temples of hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised that either of you have had time to think about local affairs because there has been three members of the royal family in the country in the last week, and I didn't think anything else happened.
Ah. Well, the London Guardian this morning was had a piece on it, and they were saying it's further muddied the waters for New Zealand's half-hearted Republican movement. And it's like, I'm all for the royal family. I think they're great.
I
have no problem with them.
I'm underwhelmed by the whole thing, but what has amused me is the media telling us. The media just has gone a little bit berserk.
There's a template for the whole thing, isn't there? Yeah. I mean, there's a template for the tour. There's a template for the coverage. You know, she walked down the stairs. She was wearing a, you know, fill in the spot.
Oh, the black coat. Dress because she was going. Yeah, you know, black woolen dress means she was looking.
I always think, you know, well, wouldn't it be better if when the royal family were in New Zealand that the coverage actually engaged with maybe some of the things like, I don't know, outstanding issues to be resolved with some of the iwi. I mean, you know, it's the crown of them. You know, let's, you know, if
William's
we're going to have the royal family here,
let's
actually get down to it.
Yeah. And party plan, of course. You could ask, what's her name? William's wife, what's her name again? Kate. You could ask her about party plan. She knows all about party plan.
Does she?
Yeah. She came from a family that made the money doing selling parties online. You could buy all you needed for parties online. That's how your family made their money.
Ooh, that's a funny way of doing things.
Yeah, no,
and when I have a party, I make my own parties.
That's
from
right.
Scratch.
No, these guys sold parties. But for me, the media coverage has been quite pathetic. I heard a radio report the other day saying high excitement in the South Island because two minibuses from Nelson drove all the way to Blenheim. Talking about two minibuses.
Wow.
So that's 15 people. Drove from Nelson to Blenheim to... Hey, is this big news? And the Marketplace had a fantastic headline. Something about the royal oil or something.
Yes.
And if you read the story, it was that...
It's got nothing to do with it.
No, the story was that the olive oil was served to journalists at a snack event when they were getting briefed about the royal visit. So the headline should have been... Shock, horror, journalists have snacks at junket.
Not much of a story.
No, but it was given the royal angle, you know.
everybody's brains turn to mush around royalty.
Well, yeah, there you go.
It's always happened.
The one thing that intrigues me is how the baby seems to have more hair than his old man. But
well, true, yes.
Not for long.
Bless him. The other headlines were amazing. Babies, what's it, the toddlers play, you know, the royal toddler plays with other toddlers. Like this yeah. was worthy of exclamation
Prince
marks.
Prince uses own legs to walk downstairs. There is something a bit cretinous about it, but I'm thinking it's all lovely. I don't mind the royal family at all.
Well, maybe it fills the need in humanity for some kind of absurdist stuff. We need some weird... Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've often argued that in Waiheke becoming independent, the last thing you want to be is some boring republic.
Yeah, we'd need
with a clutch of ex-presidents hanging around, still hanging off the public sugar tip for
you
years.
You know what? I reckon we should
be much more fun to establish the place as something like a principality or maybe a duchy.
Why don't we invite... some sort of out of work royals. You know, Queen Beatrice of the Netherlands stepped down last year. She got tired of the job. So we can invite her to come and be the Queen of Waiheke. How's that?
Can we get a local?
You know what would be fun? Would be, I've always loved the name of King Zog. Have you heard of King Zog?
King Zog of Albania.
Yeah. So yes. And they apparently, they're a royal family looking for a gig. So why don't we ask the descendants of Zog to come in?
Because by all accounts, they're really shady people.
Okay, so back to your point. We need a Waihikian royal family.
You've got to keep these things simple. I mean, if you establish a local Waiheke royal family, it's just got to be somebody who's got a nice smile and can wave nicely.
It sounds to me like you're doubting Paul Walden.
Well, maybe Jo Holmes, she's out of work right now. Do you think she could be our queen?
Oh, I think the level of bitterness there would be...
Right.
Yeah, she wouldn't smile nicely.
You need to be magnanimous to be a queen.
Yeah. It'd be one of those things if the commoners lined up to meet her, she'd bite them or something.
Actually, if we probably lost our queen last year. Doreen Burns would have been a great queen for one.
True, yeah,
she was the right sort of candidate, wasn't she?
Yes. Where is the next Doreen Burns?
Well, you know, we need something feisty. What about Mani and... Kit and Mani.
Kara, she's...
Yes.
Kara and Mani, that'd be a nice royal couple.
I think you need somebody a bit younger, a bit more glamorous. I think we must come back to this next month. Let's
go
away
homework,
and look.
Yeah.
Yes, that's our homework for next month. Is who would you choose to be the ruling royal family?
Why don't we put an ad on Seek? You know, wanted royal family for feisty little island.
Yes.
Or isn't there? There's a Waiheke website. We could put an ad on there. You know, like
must look good in a ludicrous hat with feathers on it.
Yeah,
as a start, you know.
Well, there'd be plenty of contenders for that.
But the hardest part would be...
Must be capable of making inane small talk for many hours on end. Yes.
that's the inane small talk is hard enough, but the hardest...
Sounds like you're putting yourself up for the job.
The hardest part on Waiheke would be to find this lovely, smiling, benevolent person who's above every little drama that, you know, politically...
Yes, absolutely.
Above Waiheke politics. So where would that person be?
Definitely something to look through this month. Yeah. Yes.
So we're looking for a royal couple, a royal family?
I think so, yeah. We need a family. Yeah. Definitely need a family.
Yeah. And with a Prince George at the bottom end and a doddery old mate, a doddery old patriarch at the top.
Well, yes, because the whole thing has to play out like a soap opera.
Yeah.
Yes, you've got to have
Then we could get New Zealand on air funding. We could have some money like the GC. We could, what do we call it, the royal family, the Waiheke RF.
Yeah.
The royals of Waiheke. Oh, that'd be a go.
Royals on the Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. It'd make it, interesting reality TV.
First episode next month.
Yes. last month we were talking about who the best James Bond villains would be, but I think now we've switched to who'd be the best royal family.
Yeah. I'm still racking my brains to find the family that would fit the role, that would be non-contentious.
Well, you come back with that next month. We've been talking to the opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. And and who knows, next month we might even be back on proper schedule of the first Saturday of the month.
Yes.
And we could talk about the investiture of the new royal family.
Yeah. Well,
I imagine we'd have to just think about it. We'd have to propose the royal family, and then we'd have to go into a community consultation process, and then we'd have to ask the council if the effects would be less than minor. God, I'm starting to get exhausted already.
So, thank you both for coming in.
No worries.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and we'll talk to Alan and Alex again next month here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
We're talking to Ewan McLeod and Steve Lopez, two of the people participating in the Waiheke Community Gallery's Artist in Residence, which is going on at the moment. Good morning to you both.
Hi there.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
No problem. So people can kind of tell who's who. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
So I'm Ewan.
And I'm Steve.
Yeah, and you're both here participating in this program, but more than that, you've also been kind of some of the drivers behind this happening, haven't you?
Yeah, we've done a couple of trips before around Australia with a group of artists in new communities, and have got together and painted directly from the landscape, and they might be different places that we're not necessarily familiar with, like the desert. We've been, you know, to New Zealand before, actually, at the North Island about 4 years ago, and we've actually worked overseas in Scotland and other areas. And it's doing something that's completely different for us and making maybe the locals see their communities in a different light. Yeah.
So the idea behind this is that, you know, so as you say, so a group of artists come in, they interact with the local community, they interact with the landscape through the art, and then what do you hope to achieve through your time here? What are the objectives for it all?
I think there was an element of bringing a few Australians to New Zealand too. I think that was the other component of the whole thing. I guess the outcome is to have a good show, kind of a show that works. I mean, it's always going to be difficult coming to a new place. A lot of the artists haven't even been to New Zealand before, let alone Waiheke Island. So there's a sense of making some kind of sense of that landscape, really.
So the artists who come as part of this, are they all landscape artists at home, or are they practicing in different forms and then they're kind of coming and going, right, here I am, I'm going to interpret this place?
Landscape's a sort of component of their work. It might not necessarily be totally what they're about, but we did choose, in making the selection, we did choose people that are happy to deal with the landscape, and also people that are prepared to produce the work quite quickly, because we haven't got very long to do it. We've only got a week, really, which is a bit crazy. But
and a lot of artists can't sort of deal with that. Sometimes they like to sort of absorb what they're viewing, and it takes quite a while, and work back in the studio. It's not that easy to be out in the landscape doing work that's exhibitable and in such a short time. But we know that all these artists have had experience in doing that before and are very good at what they do. So I'm sure that it'll be really interesting work. And just watching the artists respond to the island, they've been, you know, enamoured with the place and the views, and it's quite different from what they're used to, and they're doing some really interesting work.
So as well as kind of interacting with the landscape, there's been interaction with the community and the people of the island as well, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. No, they've been very friendly and more than welcoming for us, and have gone out of their way to help us and show us places that you know, are important to them. And we've sat in these areas and tried to work from them, and there's some wonderful vistas and views that you know, we haven't seen before ever, and they're just amazing.
There's certainly not a shortage of places to paint. That's, you know, there's a lot of beautiful spots.
Do you find that bringing these artists and putting them in a different environment from where they, you know, might normally be? I don't know, you know, looking out over kind of dusty red deserts and kangaroos and so on. That it brings something. I mean, the art, obviously they're painting a different place, but do they paint in a different way?
I think some of them do. I think not necessarily. We've got a couple of New Zealanders here. Chris O'Doherty, who just played one of these songs from the Mentals, and Ewan himself was born here in New Zealand. So I think they have an understanding of the landscape. But because maybe they've been away, they come back invigorated or with a fresh look at it. And we've actually learnt, us Australians, how they're approaching the landscape to maybe do something a little bit different in our own work. But we have our ways of working, and that sort of comes out. But it's processing the different colours and the terrain that is difficult, and that's what makes interesting work when you're not sure of what you're doing.
There's, and I think that whole aspect of what we produce, and, you know, having that limited time, it is a surreal challenge, and there are
pitfalls with the whole thing, but I think that's the nature of it all, really, is what we produce. I think people are going to bring stuff with them. I mean, certainly one of the artists yesterday was doing some paintings, and they looked a hell of a lot like Australia to me. They didn't look much like that Waiheke Island, but there you go.
So one of the features of this residency, I suppose, that's attracted a lot of attention is that you've got Reg Mombasa, who, as you say, you know, either is or has been known as Chris O'Doherty from Mental as Anything, but also known for the work, you know, that iconic work with Mambo, which has attracted a lot of attention, perhaps, to this. Does that differ from in the past? I mean, has that added an extra element into this residency?
It's been great when we thought about it. When Linda suggested the idea, we sort of thought, well, if we had Peter and Chris along, we could sort of do something with the dog trumpet thing, maybe, because they're both really enthusiastic. They love it. They love playing. But I think the interesting thing with Chris or Reg is that he's very well known for the mambo and the dog trumpet, but he actually is a wonderful artist in his own right, and he does a lot of work that is landscape-based, observational, and kind of beautiful. He's not really known for it, not to the same level that he's known as the other things. So he is certainly a great person to bring along. We brought him along first and foremost for his art, and the same with Peter. They came along as for their visual arts, not their music. So that was a sort of like an added component that popped into the mix.
Mm. And I suppose it's been nice because it's another way of bringing the people of the island into the project.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we're hoping lots of people will come along.
So you've got coming along. So there's a jam this afternoon, isn't there?
Yeah, 3 to 5 at the barn. Yeah, I'm not sure what the barn is called, but you'd know what the barn is down the road.
Down at Fossil Cove.
Yeah, so down at Fossil Bay, yep.
The boys will be playing, you know, some of their best tunes over the last few albums that they've put out, and they're pretty successful.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know the way, if you just kind of carry on down Karora Road and round, kind of just on the curve going round into Fossil Bay, you'll find the barn there.
So, yeah.
And I think there's quite a lot of people already booked to come, so it's going to be, you know, it sounds like it's going to be quite a fun event. And they certainly, you know, they love their music, and they've got a special guest performer with them today, which is Steve Lopez in his first major role as a musician. I think he'll give up the visual arts.
Are you playing the spoons, are you, Steve?
No, I was toying with the triangle, but no, I'm actually play harmonica. So I've recorded before, but they've asked me to play along a couple of tracks on this concert, so yeah. We've Excellent. Been rehearsing every night. It's been good fun.
Good. And will any of the kind of the visual art aspects be on display at the barn this afternoon?
Yes. So everybody, I think, is going to have some work up. It may not be the work that ultimately ends up in the exhibition, but there will certainly be our work will be there.
And it'll be a bit of a teaser, actually, you know, just to sort of show what you can expect on Thursday when the show opens here at the Regional Gallery.
And I think also tomorrow afternoon, where all the artists will be at the barn and available to be, you know, if anyone has any questions or wants to talk to us or have a look, and we'll all be there tomorrow too.
Have you two been painting as well?
Yes.
Yeah, so whereabouts? What have you painted?
We went to Man O' War yesterday, which was good, and it was avoided wine tasting and tried to do the painting. We've just been painting around the various area.
Down
really.
On Yarra, the beaches.
Little on Onirara, I painted quite a lot down there.
Fossil Cove, down the beach and up the top there, looking over the view from up high. So, yeah, no, some fantastic spots.
You're doing this outdoors. I mean, do you find that people come up and tap you on the shoulder and kind of go, what the heck are you doing? Or, you know, it doesn't look like that. Or
yes. In a word, yes.
Yesterday, Ewan was painting and was discussing rugby with a couple of locals. They had a look at his painting, said, yeah, that's nice. Who do you follow in the rugby? And then he progressed to have a conversation for half an hour about the, you know, the ups and downs of, who was it?
Crusaders.
The Crusaders.
Yeah, well, you don't get that when you're in the studio, do you?
And actually, that's an aspect of the whole trip, is that, you know, being in the studio is quite a lonely thing. And I think a lot of these artist trips have developed out of that sort of social aspect, you know, that there is a really lovely aspect to it. I mean, all of the people that have come along have been on a lot of these trips before, and I think, you know, that is the social aspect of it is a huge component of it, really. I think it's lovely.
So the opening is on Thursday.
Thursday night. There's a preview for some guests at 5 o'clock, and then at 6 o'clock it's open to the public.
Right, and the artists are all there for the opening?
Yeah, everybody will be there.
And so, I suppose after that, it's strange, isn't it? People have been creating these things, and then what, they go off home and they don't... I mean,
we're here for Easter. We leave on the Monday,
right?
But then the show's on for a number of weeks afterwards.
So I was thinking about that interaction back from the people in the community to the artworks that have been created, and you know how the artists become part of that.
Well, I think we sort of leave our mark and go in a way. So, but Linda, who's in charge of the gallery, I'm sure will give us feedback on how it's gone and how, you know, what the locals think of it. So hopefully they think some good stuff about it. If not, we don't want to know.
So you're not going to leave your thoughts about the Crusaders on the painting?
I should do a few of those, shouldn't I? Crusader paintings, yeah.
Yeah. You never know. There might be a market for that.
And actually, funnily enough, a few days later, when we get home, about half the trip, we're off to Turkey. That's so no rest for the wicked, really.
Yeah, we're painting Gallipoli. You know, there's the 100-year anniversary next year, and so there's going to be a number of the artists, and some of the artists who are on this trip will be painting the battlefields there with a war memorial historian, and we've got to reinterpret the landscape.
Well, it's been great having you in here, and good luck for the jam this afternoon for the opening. And you got the... So, you, obviously, you're off the paintbrushes today. You're back onto it tomorrow.
Just for the day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, so I suppose you're quite open to people coming up and having those conversations. You're out and about.
Totally, yeah.
So just look out.
Although sometimes you do get very frustrated and you have to... People have to allow for that.
Yeah.
trying to get it, resolve a painting, sometimes you're not as happy as
normal. Yeah, and you haven't been up against the weather so far?
No, not at all. I thought it was going to be raining when we came over here, or the forecast said, you know, rain, but we got here and it's, you know, been hotter than Australia. So, yeah, it's quite familiar territory for us, in a way, weather-wise.
Yes. So, Ewan McLeod and Steve Lopez from the Artist in Residence Program, Waiheke Community Gallery, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Great. No problem at all.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
You're on Island Life on Waiheke Radio, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery, where you'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. Tomorrow marks the annual Fossil Bay Harvest Fair, a great event that takes place every year, and we're joined by Bridget Morgan to tell us about what's going on. Good morning, Bridget.
Hi, Chris.
So I'll just get you a little bit closer into the mic there,
okay,
Bridget.
Okay, sure.
Good as gold. So this is a big event that you put on down there every year, isn't it?
Yes, it's sort of a highlight of the Waiheke sort of fair festival sessions for the year, and especially for the children, it's a really great one for kids of all ages. There's going to be so much happening for them tomorrow. It's really exciting. We've got lots of stories happening and story tent for the little ones, and all the usual games, the White Knight and the little Henny Penny who lays the egg, chocolate egg, and lots and lots of prizes. We've been overwhelmed with donations from all over the community. Some amazing, amazing prizes. Fuller's, Auckland Zoo, Motat. We've got wine from Stony Ridge, Peacock Sky. We've got knitwear. We've got veggies in organic boxes, pamper packages. It's just amazing. There's silent auctions, and you can go into raffles, so there's so much to win. And we've got to say also a really big thank you to Harcourts. They've sponsored us this year, our main sponsor, and they'll be down there on the day, which is going to be exciting.
So Fossil Bay always seems to me a place that's always expanding and changing, and
yes,
both in kind of terms of the buildings and the projects that you have going on there. So what's the focus of the fundraising from the event?
It's an ongoing fundraising we've been doing over the last few years to try and get together a community building on the site that can be used as for the whole community, for workshops, a library, drop-in centre for mums, for play circle, and Yeah, and also for craft, the craft circle. So, and available for other community activities for people to use and workshops. So, a really important building, and it's underway. We've got plans all drawn up, and yeah, hopefully that will happen in the next 12 months. It's really, really exciting.
Excellent. Now, so just run us through all the kind of the, you know, the where and what time and all that kind of details for tomorrow.
Yeah, so tomorrow it's at between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. and it's at the Fossil Bay Kindergarten on Cora Road, 58 Cora Road. So we've got, it's just entry by Koha. And there's FPOS available on the day. Rain venues to Hurahi, but the forecast is going to be spectacular. I'm sure it's going to be fine.
I can't imagine it being anywhere else because...
No, it never has been.
The setting is just such an integral part of what happens.
Yeah, it's magical, absolutely magical. And all we set up on the day, lots of little areas with craft and exciting activities for the children. We've got some adult workshops. They kick off at 10:30. Beekeeping with Richard Everett. We've got what is digestion and nutrition with Planet at 11:15. And then we've got 12 noon about bitters, drinks to help digestion. And we've got a Wonders of Bokashi with Glenda Andrew Neils. So that'll be exciting. And
you don't know what Bokashi is, do you?
No. It's something to do with... Not
composting.
Sure. I won't say anything. Composting. Thank you, Chris.
See, everyone learns something on Waiheke Radio.
Yeah. The really exciting thing, the bit that I'm really excited about, and I'll be coordinating on the day I put my hand up because it's going to be so much fun, is the music. And it's always fantastic at Fossil Bay. And this year's lineup is going to be the best. We've got Andy Lewis, who's coordinating all the sound systems, and he'll be playing with Ian Simpson. And we've got Richard Davis and Susie on their homemade guitars, which will be really spectacular and interesting. And then we have our Steve Edwards, our kindy dad, and he's going to be playing acoustic original songs and covers. And then I'll be winding up with the Solomon Cole Band, who played it at the Blackpool Fair end of last year, and they just were amazing, and they've been doing some great stuff recently. I believe they went down to Wellington and were covering for the before the motel, so they're really exciting, and they're sort of electric blues. So
what time does all the music kick off?
Music will be kicking on around 11 and playing right through till 2. And it's at the stage, there's a music stage at the kindergarten, so that'll be all happening on the music stage. We've got amazing food. Sarah from My Kitchen's coordinating the food, and it's going to be the best. Something for everyone. We will have meat, vegetarian, gluten-free. There'll be coffee, ice creams, everything that you'll want at the fair.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So that tomorrow morning,
yes,
it kicks off, and just carry on down Cora Road and out towards Ofanuki Bay, and mm-hmm. you can't miss it.
That's right.
Yeah. Good stuff. So we're going to hear some music now from Steve, and Luca and Jacob, I think, might be going to join him.
Well, we hope so.
Hold on, let's turn some microphones on. Yeah, so Luca and Jacob, if you want to join in, you can come over to this microphone here, and we'll adjust that so you can sing there. So we'll just bear with us for a moment, and we'll just make some changes in the studio here. So I'm just going to move that. Bridget, you might just want to move that chair out of the way so the boys can get in there. And those boys, if you come round and just plant yourselves in front of this microphone, nice and close, stand nice shoulder to shoulder there in front of that. And you'll need to use your big voices when you come to your part, but that's all fine. So, Steve, you're going to be taking the stage tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing these homemade guitars, actually. That should be quite interesting. I've never made my own guitar. I have made my own pick a few times, but never a guitar.
All right. So, I think everyone's done that, haven't they? Cut up the library card or something in an emergency to make a pick. So, what are you going to be playing for us this morning?
Well, we're just going to play a little bit of a snippet of a song which we've been it's been echoing around our house quite a lot in the last few months. We had a little boy, Jude Alexander Edwards. who's just coming up to 6 months old, and he, yeah, Hey Jude has been a song that's been sung quite a lot. So we're going to, I've just properly learnt this morning, we normally just busk it at home, but we'll give it a crack, just a verse and a chorus. And I've got Luca, who's 6, and Jacob, who's 4.5, who you might hear a little bit in the background.
Excellent, take it away.
You ready, boys? You with me? Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it better. My voice knows that.
Anytime
you feel the pain, hey Jude, refrain. Don't let the world upon we stick it.
Excellent. We heard you guys. I turned your microphone up so everyone could hear you. Good work. So you're going to be joined by, are you two boys going to join Dad on the stage tomorrow?
Yep.
Okay, just take your fingers off the mic there, buddy. So you can use your mouth though. So what? Tell us, boys, what are the songs that you're going to join in with tomorrow? Come up nice and close to the microphone to tell us. Are you going to play Hey Jude again?
Yes.
Excellent. Is that your favourite?
Yes.
Good stuff. And you sing it so nicely.
And
you've got some instruments?
You talk.
He's shy. You talk.
They're both being shy.
You talk.
And we'll get the maracas shy out tomorrow as well. Thanks very much, Steve, no Luke, and Jacob. Luca, sorry, and Jacob. And thanks very much, Bridget. The Harvest Fair. Oh, there we go. We'll just get you back on. So tell everyone again what time to turn up.
10 o'clock it starts, so rock on down, and it'll be going all day, so you can come anytime. The food will be going all day, and we're winding up around 2, so come down anytime. You get out and you've had your come down and have your coffee. Basically, we'll have the coffee cart there at 10, so come straight down, have your coffee, and we'll look after you and entertain you for the day.
Great, see you there.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Waiheke Radio.
You're on Island Life on Waiheke Radio. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. And once a month we're joined by a representative from the Waiheke Island Council of Social Services, which is an umbrella group of a number of organisations doing good work around the community, supporting the environment, supporting people, lots of social services and so on. And Dawn Jeffries from the Waiheke Resource Trust, who's a member organisation of WICOS, is with us this morning. Good morning, Dawn.
Good morning, Chris.
So was that a fair summary?
That was a fantastic introduction, a great summary. You've stolen half of my intro there, but that's great.
Well, that's the perils of being informative.
Yeah.
You know? So, the Council of Social Services, I suppose in the last year or so, has gone through a bit of a period of kind of transition with Hira passing away, who was kind of leading that organisation so well. And kind of what state is it in at the moment?
It's in a really strong state, I feel. There's a great group of people involved. from all different areas on the island. There's representatives from the different health groups, from the budgeting service, education, churches, from the local marae. And we also have representatives from the local board and from Auckland Council who attend the meetings. It's a fantastic opportunity to get to know different people in the community who are doing amazing work. A lot of the groups are charities and not-for-profits, so it's a great place to get to know what the other people are doing if you're coming from that not-for-profit sector. Yeah.
So does it give, allow the opportunity for groups to cooperate and go into things together?
It certainly does, yeah. WICOS will act as an umbrella organisation if you're applying for funding, so there's a lot of support there. For example, the last meeting, week before last, we had Bernard Rhodes come along talking about Waiheke Working Sale. And for a lot of the people there, they'd heard about it, or maybe not, and it was a real opportunity to share that information. And from that meeting, people were able to say, wow, that's great that you're supporting youth initiatives on the island, and that's something that we do, and let's talk more. Yeah.
Good stuff. So those kind of initiatives come out of it. Are there any other projects which WICOS is spearheading and pushing ahead at the moment?
Not that I'm aware of. I've really just connected with them in the last month. They have a few things coming up for the members. They're going to be doing some strategic planning. Okay, Poppy, I won't be long, love. So they're going to be doing some strategic planning shortly, and they're also going to be doing something supporting volunteers on the island.
Yep.
Yeah. I was interested in joining them and being an active member because I've recently started a postgraduate diploma in not-for-profit management, which is a wonderful diploma out at Unitech in Mount Albert. And so what I'm learning about is managing not-for-profits, which is what I've been doing now for a number of years. Come from Fossil Bay Kindergarten and now at the Waste Resources Trust. And I want to be able to share some of that information with other not-for-profits. And so I was thinking, well, how can I do that? And then realised that WICOS is already set up as an organisation to do that. And rather than reinventing the wheel, getting involved with it, that existing group. So I'm really excited to be involved with them, and I'm helping out with their Facebook page just to get some of that information out to the community. For example, last week there was a workshop with COGS and lotteries to support people applying for funding applications. So things like that that can really give a lot of benefit to organisations. It's great to get that information out.
Yeah. It's just the bane of your life, isn't it, in a not-for-profit organisation, that constant hunt for funding, the constant need to make funding applications.
Yeah, I've got about six on the go at the moment. There's the Waste Minimisation and Innovation Fund, which opened on the 1st of April, closes on the 30th, and that's with Auckland Council, and that's supporting zero waste initiatives, which is something very close to our heart at the Waiheke Resources Trust. We'll be at the Harvest Fair tomorrow supporting a zero waste event, and the following Easter Monday at the Harvest Kai Hangi down at the marae. Yeah, we've had a busy summer with zero waste. We were at the Christmas festival, at the carols in Little Oniroa, at the music in the parks, at the Onatangi Beach races, at the Children's Day recently. So it's been wonderful to be at all those events and support zero waste and minimising. Hello, Poppy. Do you want to say hello? Is that what you'd like to do?
Hello.
What's your name?
Poppy.
And how old are you?
Five.
Are you? I thought you just had a birthday. All right. I'll see you soon, Poppy. It's Mummy's turn to talk now, okay? So yeah, they've kind of moved on to the Waiheke Resources Trust, and that's one of the things we're doing at the moment, and continue to do, is the zero waste programs. So yes, very busy doing funding applications to support that program.
So with something like the zero waste, I mean, and those, you know, those public events and the profile that you have there, I suppose the challenge, isn't it, is to go beyond something which is, you know, those kind of you know, public profile, into the more, the deeper, more systemic changes which are needed to actually impact on waste.
Yeah, well, one of the projects we're doing at the moment is on food waste, and that's being funded by Auckland Council. Food waste is a huge problem. Apparently 30 to 40% of the waste going into wheelie bins or red bags is food, which ends up in landfill, which is a huge problem and a huge cost. And that landfill environment isn't a compostable environment, so the food doesn't, you know, it doesn't compost, and it causes methane gases. So that project's headed by Daughter Ray, and she's also got Susan Barker working with her. And they started off with a pilot project of 50 families to get the resources right. And then once they'd done that, they moved into the whole suburb of Blackpool, and they're engaging every household, ideally, in a food waste program, which is educating them on how much food waste they actually have, and how they can reduce that, how they can save money, and different ways to... different ways to manage that waste. So there's been composting courses, bokashi, worms, things like that. So it's been quite eye-opening for those people to see how much food waste actually goes into their rubbish bins.
Yeah, and we talked to Daughter and Susan at the start of that project, and I think if you look on the Waiheke Radio website, you'll be able to track down podcasts there talking about the pilot of that. Yeah,
great.
But it's good to hear that it's going from strength to strength.
It is, yeah. One of the applications we're doing this month is to get zero waste at the Ostend Market. And that's something that we've been wanting for a long time. It's our most regular public event, and it's a real showcase of our community and our island. And it would be really nice to get a waste station set up there, because there's a fair bit of waste created.
Just put you on the spot, just because I just heard about this yesterday. So the inorganic collection,
yes,
which I suppose is more than just a way of disposing of waste, but somewhat of a community event.
Yes,
to be no more. I mean, in terms of, I mean, personally, I'm gutted. I've built trolleys, computers, God knows, tree huts, spouted my carport on the back of the inorganic collection. But from a waste perspective, if I was to be more responsible, is that a good or a bad thing?
The inorganic collection?
To do away with it.
To do away with it? I think it's a bad thing. I think there's pros and cons of it. You've just mentioned some of the pros. The cons is that a lot of it ends up in landfill. Once it gets to the centre down there in Ostend, it's over. It's in one of those huge, huge big bins, and it's on its way. There is a project happening in Auckland where they are contracting a group, or they're putting out tenders for groups to be contracted to handle the inorganics and to be able to recycle as much as possible. So it'd be great to see that happening.
It always seems to me that the problem with having that organised recycling as opposed to the, you know, to the scrambling over piles and picking stuff out is different standards. I mean, what someone who has to be very aware of safety and all those kind of concerns at a centre might consider to be recyclable or non-recyclable, I may very well go, I could fix that.
I think it's that comes back to people, having the right people working in those organisations that come from a passion of recycling. having key people in the right positions, I think would help solve that problem.
Yeah. And we haven't got them anymore, thank God. But back in the very, very first days of this radio station, a lot of our computers had components that we scrounged out of computers in the inorganic collection.
Yeah. And that reminds me of the great work that New Hope is doing down there. I just went to a gifting on Thursday morning, where they were giving money back to the community, which has come from people's so-called rubbish that they've dropped off to New Hope. And New Hope have given over $200,000 back to the community. They gave $20,000-something on Thursday morning. They're doing a great job.
Yeah. Excellent. So New Hope, another organisation who are involved in YCOS. So some of the other organisations have got some things coming up, haven't they?
Fiona Gregory, she's down at the Adult Literacy.
Yeah, I've heard of her.
She wants the community to know that there is some spaces available in the Young Mums group, and that's for mothers under 25 who need some support there. Yeah.
And that's kind of what, focusing on literacy and kind of what, employment skills, kind of stuff?
Yeah. And, you know, confidence as well, and just supporting them to...
Yeah, and I suppose that networking opportunity is so important.
It is, yeah, it is, hugely, yeah. I mentioned Bernard Rhodes earlier, the Waiheke Working Sale, fantastic project that's going to give a lot of benefits to the community. What they're doing is doing a rebuild on a boat called the Kate at the moment, and once it's all up and running, it's going to be used for many different things, including environmental research. But I think one of the big benefits will be to the youth on the island, and it's going to offer 5-day sailing adventures for young people around the age of 14 to challenge them and support their confidence. So that's a wonderful project, yeah.
So, it always seems that often people come to the island and go, oh, they look around and go, oh, I've got a good idea, and they, you know, start an organisation, and often people don't take stock or perhaps don't know of what's already going on. Mm. So it sounds like that Facebook page is going to be a good opportunity for people to kind of deal with that. So, I mean, how do people get in contact, find it out what's going on with YCOS?
Come to the meeting. That's your best bet. The next one is on the Tuesday, the 6th of May, 10 a.m. at the Surfdale Hall. Or check out the Facebook page. I mean, some of the information will be there, but things like the minutes from the meeting, you really need to make contact and get on the email list.
And what's the Facebook page called?
YCOS. Yeah. If you'd like to join, to become a member, it's $20 for the year, which is pretty reasonable.
Yeah,
and you'll meet some amazing people who are working really hard supporting our community.
Cool. So it's Dawn Jeffries, manager of Waiheke Resource Trust, and representing the Waiheke Island Council of Social Services, YCOS, and joining us as YCOS do once a month here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio. Thanks very much, Dawn.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.